Okay, so this concept in this Mishnah.
That's right.
So the concept in this Mishnah, we've already discussed a couple times already in the Masechta. This is the source for it, so we're going to get more clarity on how do we know it's true. But we know this concept already. What am I talking about? The Mishnah says, "Ein ha'edim zomim nahargin ad shigamer hadin." You don't kill the false witnesses, meaning you don't give them the reciprocal punishment, ad shigamer hadin, until the trial has been completed on the defendant.
The sentence has been passed.
Passed, exactly. Nigmar hadin, the verdict has been handed out, right? Meaning, if the false witnesses get falsified immediately after they testify, before the trial had been completed, they do not receive the reciprocal punishment. It's only, again, as we mentioned, in the window of time in between the end of the trial and when the punishment gets executed upon the defendant. Right? In that window, in between those two events, if a second set of witnesses come and falsify the first set, so that's when they become Edim Zomim and they have to pay the reciprocal punishment. But if they're falsified either before the end of the trial or after the punishment, no. So now we're just focusing on the first point there, which is that if they're falsified before the trial ends, there's no consequence. Now, we're going to contrast this with the Tzedukin. Who are the Tzedukin? The Sadducees. You guys familiar with these guys? These guys are important historical sect of...
Second Templar?
It's a Second Templar, yeah, right?
Earlier Reform.
Early Reform, right? Maybe early conservative. We'll have to see exactly what it is, right? But the position of the Tzedukim, and there's groups that exist today that share this position, not many, but there are, right? That they believe in the written Torah, the Torah Shebichtav, but not the Torah Shebaal Peh. So anytime there's a drasha, they say, I don't know what you're talking about, right? They just read the Torah as straightforwardly and simply as possible. The major issue with this approach is that it's not possible, right? There's certain things you just have no idea what you're talking about, or you get the total wrong impression from reading the verses. So what verse? So where did these guys go wrong? Let's see. Shaharei hatztukin omrim, because the tztukim actually disagree with this principle, and they say, ad shiyahareg. Now, you can't give the false witnesses the punishment until they succeed in accomplishing their plot against the victim. Meaning, if they accuse a guy of being a murderer, so they can only receive a reciprocal punishment if they succeed in having the guy killed.
Yeah.
If they actually succeed in getting the guy killed, that's when there's a reciprocal punishment. The rabbis say, no. It's only in that window of time before he actually gets killed after the trial, after the verdict. But the Sadducees say negative. They say you kill him, or you kill the witnesses only if they succeed in killing the other guy. Now, where did they get this from? Because the verse says, Shenemar, this is actually a misprint, right? It should say Nefesh bin Nefesh, right? Because the verse regarding Edim Zomim says, a life for a life, right? So they say, look, it's only going to be that they're going to get killed if they succeed in killing the other guy, because the verse says a life for a life. They read the Torah very literally, and they don't accept any drasha, right? So they say, look, the Torah says a life for life, only if the witnesses succeed in getting a guy killed. That's where you have reciprocal punishment. How do the sages respond to this? Omru lahem chachamim. The sages replied, and they said, kvar nemar, yeah, but there's another pasuk also before that, which we know, that says, v'asisem lo kasher zomam lasos lachiv. You'll do to him as he conspired.
He says planned, yeah.
As he conspired, as he planned. Right? I don't know, yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
Zomam, right? Yeah. As they conspired to do to their brother. Right? So the Chachamim say, yeah, but it says in the verse, it's only in the stage of conspiracy. If they say, the harei achiv kayim, I mean, they have a little bit of a different drasha. The last word in that pasuk is, and they will do to him as they conspire to do to their brother. Right? Now, brother implies that the guy's still around. That's how the sages learn. V'harei achiv kayim. And it makes it implied that they only receive this reciprocal punishment of as they conspired to do when their brother is still around. If the brother's not there anymore, if he's gone, so they don't get the punishment. So that's the sages' drasha, that they're using this word brother, which seems to be superfluous in the pasuk. It seems to be extra brother in the pasuk to say that it's only when brother is still around, that's when the witnesses get the reciprocal punishment. If brother's not around, they don't. Okay, so these sages still have to explain.
After he's executed, he's not considered any brother anymore, that's it? Why would they... think that
it just wouldn't use that. It just wouldn't use that word. It's not that he wouldn't be considered on par. Meaning the Gemara in Sanhedrin, I think you guys saw already in the sixth parak, says that if somebody gets executed by Beis Din, they go immediately to Olam Haba, right? If they did tshuva before, so it's a full atonement for them, and there's like they're treated as though they're not their sin is no longer with them anymore. But to call him brother is still a funny thing, right? A brother is not somebody, not something you'd call your Jewish relative that is no longer alive. We wouldn't call
call him a mace or something.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a.
So up to the point of execution, he was a brother.
That's right.
Afterwards,
he's not alive. It's not that he's not a brother; he's not alive. Right, so we just don't want to use this word "brother" to refer to somebody who's not alive.
Okay.
That's the drasha the sages have, right? Which is the Sadducees say, "What are you talking about? That's a little bit too far fetched, right? That's a drasha. We don't like drushas. We just go with the simple reading of the pasuk, right? But the sages still need to explain the second pasuk, which is a life for a life, nefesh b'nefesh. What do they do with that? Right? Why would the Torah say a life for a life if it meant you're only supposed to kill them while he's still your brother before his life was taken? V'im kein, and if so, according to the sages, that you can't punish the witnesses if they succeed in their plot, lama nemar nefesh b'nefesh. Why would the verse say a life for a life?
They're completely different verses.
It's true, but they're both in the context of Edom Zomim. So they both seem to be talking about the same punishment. So if one says a life for a life, and the other one says no, only when he's still your brother before he dies. So how do you understand both those two separate psukim? Yeah, you hear?
I'm just looking at the pasuk. It says, v'imasoni yeh, nefesh tachad nefesh.
Yeah.
And that's in Shmos.
That's right.
The other one,
but it's still talking about Edom Zomim over there.
It's talking about Edom Zomim.
Yeah. So what do you do with this nefesh b'nefesh? What is the verse they quote there? Actually, read to me one more time. It's not the right pasuk. They quoted you the wrong pasuk also. Right? That's what I told you. It's nefesh b'nefesh. The Gemara says nefesh tachas nefesh, but all the Mefarshim here change it. It's not nefesh tachas nefesh. It's the wrong pasuk there. It's nefesh
in Dvarim or something?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Dvarim Yud Tes, if you want to look it up.
Yeah, should I bring it?
No. I'm telling you. You can look it up after if you want. But it's a pasuk regarding Edom Zomim. It says nefesh b'nefesh. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what did the sages do with this life for a life story? So they say, Yachol Mishash Kiblu Edusa and Yahargu, you might have thought, as soon as the witnesses testify against their brother, they could already be susceptible to the reciprocal punishment if they're falsified. Meaning, as soon as they testify falsely, if they get busted, they could be punished, you would think. Right? Because the guy's his brother, he's still around. Talmud Lomar, Nefesh B'Nefesh. The verse says, a life for a life. Ha'ena Nahargi, Nachi Gamradin. They're not going to get the consequence. They're not going to get killed until his trial is finished. Once the guy's trial is finished, he's a walking dead man. Right? So it's like a Nefesh Tachas Nefesh. So now they are getting killed for essentially putting this other guy's life in jeopardy. Right? By putting this guy as a walking dead man.
Because he's considered dead.
He's considered like he's dead. So the pasuk can say Nefesh B'Nefesh. They won't get killed until that point. They won't get killed until they're falsified at that point where they've convicted this guy and made him like a walking dead man. But also, they won't get punished if they succeed in killing him and actually killing him, because then he's not achiv anymore. So we have these two psukim that create the window of time that the witnesses can receive the reciprocal punishment in between. You have from the first pasuk of nefesh b'nefesh that it has to be after the trial ended, because then he's not a walking dead man before that. But it has to be before he's killed, because then he's not brother anymore. He's not achiv anymore. That's the Mishnah. Good?
Right.
Says the Gemara.
The trial completed until he's killed.
Pardon me?
And the trial completed until he's killed.
That's right. So I said we learned this before. The Mishnah is just telling us the verses and the issue with the Sadducees, the Tzedukim, and why they seem to disagree over here. Yeah.
How long generally is that time frame? Like, would it be in the context of from the judgment pass until death? How long does that usually take?
It's the same day. They say in the Sanhedrin there, they talk about you can't delay the punishment. Oh, right. So for a death penalty or for lashes or something like that, it would certainly have to be prompt. Uh-huh. For money, I mean, I had this question, which is I'm not sure the answer. The question I was wondering is it from the time there's now a obligation for the guy to pay, or until Beis Din actually gets the money? Meaning, let's say the guy has no money, right? So he has a debt, okay? They're not going to sell him to slavery for this, right? Just to pay a debt from Beis Din. That's only if you steal, as we saw, right? So if a guy doesn't have money to pay back what he owes to Beis Din, So he could take a long time to pay. They give an IOU. So I was wondering if that would extend the amount of time that the witnesses could be falsified, or it's only until the time when Beis Din rules that that debt is now incumbent upon, I don't know. So yeah, for money, I'm not sure.
How would that even work? How can you keep track?
Not monetary compensation. Monetary compensation, you can do that argument about the time period to pay back.
That's what I'm saying. Only with money. Yeah. It's only with money. With anything else, for sure, it's on the same day.
Same day.
Okay. So
yeah.
That's it.
No, so I'm asking just a question regarding the money. That's all I'm asking. Okay. As I say, regarding money, I don't know. Okay. I have to investigate that further. Says the Gemara. Tana, we learned in Abraisa. Beribi Omer. Beribi says, Lo hargu nahargin. If they do not succeed in killing the guy yet, meaning they get caught before they killed the guy, nahargin, they do get killed, like we just said in the Mishnah, right? Hargu, if they do kill the guy, ain nahargin, they don't get killed, right? Basically the same point as our Mishnah. Omar Aviv, but his father responded to him and says, I don't know about this, right? So far, Baribi's going with our Mishnah, everything's consistent, but his father has a kasha on him. His father says, Bini, my son, Lav kal v'chomeru, isn't it logical to prove otherwise? Meaning, what's the obvious kal v'chomer? If they get killed for just trying to kill, for sure they should get killed for succeeding in killing the guy, right? It's logical. It's a kal v'chomer. Amar lo, his son responded, and he said, Limad tonu rabbeinu, you already taught us, our teacher. Right? He responded to his father this way. Right? He says, you already taught us once. You're never allowed to give a punishment for a Torah prohibition from logic. Yeah. It's true, you can deduce whatever you want logically, but unless there's either an explicit verse in the Torah, or there's a drasha, or we have some oral tradition that there's a punishment for this particular aveira, you cannot give it from logic, even though it makes perfect sense, and you can say, well, if I'm punishing this guy from the Torah, for sure I should punish this guy. No, you're never allowed to punish from logic in the Torah. And that's the topic for today's discussion, is where do we know this principle that you're not allowed to punish from logic? No. We're going to learn this today. Sound good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ditanya, as we learned in a Braisa, now we're going to research this topic of where do you know you're not allowed to punish out of logic? So we need to go into the most obvious case where it's clear you can't punish from logic, and that is a case of incest. Okay, the Mishnah says, or the Pasuk says, sorry, Ish asher yikach es achoisoi, a man who will take his sister, Bas Aviv, who is the daughter of his father, meaning his half-sister from his father's side. That's a big problem, that's a no-no. Or alternatively, Bas Imo, his half-sister from his mother's side. That would also be a big problem too. So the Torah tells us no half-sisters, right? Ein liela bas aviv. The Mishnah speaks it out. The Gemara speaks it out now. From there, I would only know your half sister on your father's side, shelo bas imo. That's not also your mother's daughter. And I would also know bas imo shelo bas aviv. I know your mother's daughter, who's not your father's daughter. I know your two half sisters. However, the Mishnah asks, bas imo ubas aviv minayin. Where do I know your full sister from? Right? That's what I understand. Now, if we could deduce this from logic, that you're going to get killed for your half-sisters, for sure your full sister is worse.
Yeah.
But the Mishnah says, no, we need a special pasuk in the Torah to tell you that it's equally as severe and the person could be punished for that. Right? Talmud Lomar, the pasuk continues and says, Ervas achoso gila, the nakedness of his sister he has revealed. Now that's totally extra in the pasuk. We know what has happened there, right? So that is adding a drasha to teach us even his full-fledged sister too. So we have three elements of the pasuk that teach us one half-sister, the other half-sister, and the full sister. And since, now it's going to speak it out. Ad shelo yomar, before it told me the full sister, right? Before the pasuk told me anything about my full sister, yesh li bedin, I could have figured this out logically. If I would have been punished for my half-sister on my father's side, and I would have been punished for my half-sister on my mother's side, isn't it obvious I should be punished for my full sister? Halamata, you learn from here, says the Braisa, you're never allowed to apply punishments from logic, otherwise the Torah would have saved his breath.
What's the punishment?
Death.
Even though you're not allowed to, the conclusion is the same. you do get punished.
That's correct, but we couldn't have deduced it logically. We need an extra pasuk. The Torah needs to waste
it. To deduce it logically. We don't need to. We already have it there. And
no, the point is the Torah doesn't waste his time. If I could have deduced something logically, the Torah doesn't waste extra verses telling me something.
Oh, I see.
So since he gave me an extra obvious verse, it must be I'm not allowed to learn it out logically.
Yeah.
For sure, no one's arguing there's a logic here.
Yeah.
The question is whether that logic I'm allowed to use.
Yeah.
Torah's saying, you're not allowed to. How do I know you're not allowed to? Because he wasted his time telling me a third case in the sister case that I would have never needed. It's a proof that I'm not allowed to use logic, and I need all three verses. Okay, now we continue the same type of discussion with a warning pasuk. Now, anytime you're going to get a punishment from the Torah, a death penalty, a lashes, anything of that nature, it needs to be two psukim in the Torah. One is the punishment pasuk, the onesh pasuk, and one is the azhara pasuk, the warning pasuk. There always needs to be two. So what we're going to learn now is the same thing. I can't even get the warning pasuk from rationale. Now, this isn't to say I can't create an isser from rationale. That we could do. I could figure out by logic that something should be usser, something should be prohibited. But I can't even create a warning pasuk which would serve as the first half of the punishment package. Right? In order to punish, you need two psukim. You need a warning pasuk and you need a punishment pasuk. So even if I have one pasuk in the Torah which says a punishment explicitly for a particular crime, I wouldn't be able to implement that punishment until I could find a warning pasuk also. So that warning pasuk we're going to learn now, you also can't deduce from logic. Right? I can't create anything that's going to lead to a punishment from logic. Not the actual punishment, what the punishment should be, not the warning pasuk either, to create a double verse situation which would enable me to give the punishment. I can't create the warning pasuk from logic either. That's what we're getting into now.
The warning pasuk for every...
Yes. Yeah. Every single aver that's going to have a onish from Beis Din, like a death penalty or makas, not for money. But for anything else, there will be a warning pasuk as well. So where do we know this principle that you can't create the warning pasuk other than logic? I mean, you know, we only did the punishment so far. That was with the sister case.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go. Onesh shamanu. We have found already a source to tell us regarding punishments that you can't do it logically. Azhara minayin. What about warnings? Where do I see warnings you can't do them logically? Talmud lomar. The verse says also regarding the same sister business, right? We're doing the warning psukim for the sister now, right? So separate parsha. The previous was in Vayikra Chaf. Now we're in Vayikra Yudches. So chapter 18. Two chapters before that previous verse we were talking about the sister, we find more verses about sisters. Let's see. It says, Ervas achoscha bas avicha, the nakedness of your sister who's the daughter of your father, O bas imecha, or the daughter of your mother. Right? Same thing exactly here. Eim li ela bas aviv shlo bas ima. I only know your half-sister from your father. Ubas imo shlo bas aviv, or your half-sister from your mother. Bas aviv bas imo menayin. Where do I see a warning pasuk for your full sister? Talmud lomar, ervas bas eishas avicha, molades avicha. Achos chahi. The pasuk says, the nakedness of the daughter of your father's wife, the daughter of your father, she is your sister. It's an extra verse again that we're just using a drasha to tell me it must be talking about the full sister here.
Yeah.
We have an extra third source that tells me a warning pasuk for my full sister. Achlo yomar, before you told me the warning about my full sister, yeshli min adin, I could have deduced it logically. Maim huzar al bas imo, just like I was already warned for my half-sister on my mother's side, shlo bas aviv, who's not my father's daughter, ubas aviv shlo bas imo, and my father's daughter, who's not my mother's daughter. Bas aviv bas imo lokoshgen, my full sister. Isn't it obvious that I should be warned against her? Halamat tashin mazhir min adin. We see from here you can't warn from logic either. Okay. So we did warning, we did punishment, let's continue. What we should point out is the whole source in the Mishnah which tells us we don't give the reciprocal punishment to the witnesses until they are in that window of time between the end of the trial and the punishment. The verse we used for that was a life for a life. You can't punish the witnesses immediately after they testify because they need to have put the guy's life in jeopardy, which is the end of the trial. So the Gemara is going to say, well, that is a good source now for not killing them, but why can't I make them pay money if we falsify them immediately? Right. Or why can't I give them lashes if we falsify them immediately? So that's what we're going to go into now.
But
okay.
They get killed one after the other. The,
it's the same time.
One
yeah.
gets killed, and then the next two witnesses get killed straight away.
That's right.
Must be the same day, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Same day for killing, for sure.
Right away.
Don't we see this whole thing of life for life, or an eye for an eye?
That's with, yeah, that's with when you actually kill a person. Well, the life for life over there is talking about a fetus. It's not talking about an actual person there. But you're right. If it says an eye for an eye or anything like that, that like when it says an eye for an eye, that definitely means
so
money.
You say the same principle?
No, it doesn't say that over here.
No, but if those are all financial, then if this was a financial situation with Aiden Zomarin.
Oh, so just apply it there also?
Yeah, and say that the same applies.
It's an interesting idea, but the Gemara doesn't know. I have to think about it. I hear. It's an interesting idea.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Could be the answer is that it doesn't mean a life for a life, an eye for an eye, it does not mean money. We have a special drusha over there when it talks about you actually knocking out a guy's eye or chopping off his hand, that you don't get your hand or eye removed. You just pay money as compensation. It's a special drusha over there. But it could be that doesn't change the simple meaning of the words, right? So when we find those words elsewhere, you have to read them normally. In that one context, yeah. right, with that one pasuk where it says an eye for an eye, so we have a special drusha over there. Maybe that's the answer. I don't know.
Like drush means oral Torah, right?
Drush means, yeah. There's some rabbinic expounding of the pasuk to get the meaning they want.
That's not from Sinai. Like,
yeah, yeah, for sure it is. No, yeah, that's what I meant. But it's the tools that the rabbis have received from Sinai. Like we read in the morning, the Rabbi Shmuel, the 13 principles of drush. Right? So those are the 13 systems that the Torah permits you to, teaches you how to read the Torah properly to get the right lesson out. Okay, let's continue. Chayave Malkios Menayim. Let's say that the false witnesses had accused the defendant of lashes. So from where do we know that they don't get lashes until the guy's trial's over, right? There's no life for a life going on over here. Talmud Lomar, Rasha, Rasha. Yeah, you're right, but we have a Gzeir Shava with the words Rasha, Rasha. It says the word Rasha by when they try to kill the guy, and it says Rasha regarding lashes too. So just like when they try to kill the guy, they won't get the reciprocal punishment until the trial's over. So too for lashes, right? It's not from the words a life for a life. It's a special gzera shava that connects the two concepts. Moving on. Chayavi golios menayim. Now, what if they're accusing the guy of exile, which means what punishment do the false witnesses get?
Sent to exile.
No.
Lashes.
First mission on the Masechta.
Lashes.
First mission on the Masechta, right? Mm-hmm. It's one of the exceptions. If they accuse a guy of exile, they get lashes instead, right? So we just said lashes, so why are we asking again now? It's because this time the lashes are not from the source of kasher zamam. It's a different type of lashes. It's not a reciprocal punishment form of lashes, because they're not getting a reciprocal punishment over here. They accuse the guy of exile, they're getting lashed. It's rather a punishment to them that comes from a different source. And therefore we lose the word rasha.
So it's like a fine.
Yeah, they're all fines. But the point over here is that we lose the gzera shava of rasha, rasha. Because the word Russia that we were using a second ago to say that lashes would also only be a reciprocal punishment at the end of the trial, that word Russia you find within the context of Kasher Zamam. But you don't have that. Well, you really do have it. I don't know.
Yes.
The article says Russia is the execution, and also Russia is it Malkus. So it teaches you that.
No, I understand. But the question I'm. Yeah. So what Rashi says, I remember what Rashi says here. What Rashi says is he says because the word Russia is going on the defendant. Is going on the defendant there. So if the word Russia is going on the defendant, so it's only when they accuse the defendant of being the subject to lashes. But here they're not accusing the defendant of being subject to lashes, they're accusing him of exile. So we couldn't use that drush of Russia, Russia, because here they're not accusing the defendant of lashes. For whatever reason, we can't use the Gzeir Shav of Russia, Russia. Right. So we need another source to tell me that they only get lashed when they accuse the guy of going to exile after he's been convicted to go to exile. Minayin, where do we know this from? Asi Rotzeach, Rotzeach. A different Gzeir Shav of murderer, murderer. Right? Either way, we're connecting all the laws together, and we have one clear source of a life for a life, which tells us that the false witnesses don't get punished until they put his life in jeopardy. So too, even if it's lashes. Money, anything else. We have a Gzera Shava. Okay, story time, and then we'll... we have a bit more time still, I think, right?
Yeah,
about 15 minutes.
No, the rabbi told me to stop earlier today. I don't know why. He said half an hour maximum.
Really?
Okay, yeah. So I don't know. We're at 24 minutes, so we'll do the stories. We should be able to finish until the Mishnah. Omar Rebbe Yehuda ben Tabai. This is an interesting story here, guys. Okay, Rebbe Yehuda ben Tabai, who was very early one of the Tanaim. Right? If you look in the Pirkei Avos, he comes up early. So he says, Ere b'nechama, this is an expression. Literally it means, I will see the consolation, meaning I'll see the redemption, something like that, right? Now, this is a phrase that, like, implies an oath. It's just like, I swear, right? It's like if I'm not right, like, I won't see the redemption, right? So it's sort of like an opposite. Right, it's sort of like wait, he's actually wrong here, so it's actually really the bad news, right? So we'll see, right? But he says, like, I'll see the consolation, im lo haranti eid zomem, if I didn't kill a false witness, in the singular, if I didn't kill a false witness, lahotzi miliban shel tzedukim, to make sure that the Sadducees would see that we don't go with them, that we do it differently than them. Shehayu omrim, because the Sadducees used to say, as we know already, ein ha'edim zomim nahargim, you don't kill the false witnesses, ad shiharag hanidon, until the victim, the defendant, gets killed. That's how the Sadducees say. You have to kill the guy literally. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai says, you know, I promise, I killed this guy, I killed this false witnesses to make sure that the Sadducees are going to see that they're wrong, and I killed him before he succeeded in killing the guy. It was after the trial in the window, like we've been talking about. It seems like he did the right thing over here, Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, right? So he says, I promise I killed this guy to make sure that Tzedukim are demonstrated to be wrong. Amar lo Shimon ben Shetach. Shimon ben Shetach responded. Who's Shimon ben Shetach? He was the head of the Sanhedrin at the time, right? So Shimon ben Shetach responded to him, and he says, "Era ben Nechama." He says, "I promise," right? He says, "I promise." In lo shafach the damnaki, that if you didn't spill innocent blood, right? He says, "You have done something naughty over here, Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai. You blew it." Shareyamu chachamim, because there's another that's true that you wanted to get around the tzedukim, and I know you're right and the tzedukim are wrong, but you missed another issue over here. Shareyamu chachamim, because the sages have already taught us, ein ha'edim zomim nahargim, you cannot kill any of the false witnesses, ad shir zomu shneim, until you falsify both of them. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, remember, said, I killed an ein zomem, one of them, right? What are you doing? You killed one? You only falsified one of them? You can't do that, right? You spilt innocent blood. He's got no right, Basin has no right to kill this guy until they're able to kill both. You killed one of them? What did you do over here, right? You had the time period right in between, the window of time right, but you missed the fact that there was only one of them here. You didn't get the whole set. They wouldn't even get lashes until you caught both of them. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai realized he blew it, and he also swore, right? Well, actually, his swearing was correct. Right, he did actually kill the guy for the sake of going against the Sadducees, but he also killed the guy when he wasn't allowed to. Right? That's a separate
Hopefully
point.
Hopefully, the Sadducees don't know enough today.
What's this?
Hopefully, the Sadducees didn't know enough.
Yeah,
to copy him. Yeah, we'll see. Well, either way, Miyad at that moment, immediately, Kibel alav Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, he accepted upon himself this rabbi who killed the guy. She'eino moira hara. He's not going to rule any further. He's not going to rule any longer. El lefnei Shim ben Shetach. Unless Shim ben Shetach is present and he can correct him. Right? He says, I need this head of the Sanhedrin here to make sure I'm not blowing it. And that's not the end of the story. The kol yamav shel Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai. All the days, for the rest of his life, this rabbi who killed this false witness, for the rest of his life, hayamishtateach al kivro shel oso ha'ed. He would be prostrating himself there in front of the gravesite of that particular witness, meaning that guy who he killed. He would just go to his grave every day and be begging for forgiveness. V'haya koiloi nishma, and a voice could be heard coming out of that cemetery, always. Ukusfur and ha'am lomar, but the people in the city, the townsfolk, were thinking kolo shel hoireg. They thought it was the guy who got killed. His voice, meaning it was his voice, like screaming out, like yelling at this guy back. They thought it was such a crazy sound that it must be some angelic voice that's coming from the other side. Omar, but the rabbi said, no, it's not that guy's voice. Koli shalihu, it's my voice. I'm screaming. It's me screaming. I'm just really upset about this. That it sounds really funny. And Tadu, and he says, I'll prove it to you that it's my voice. Right now he's getting sidetracked away from his primary mission here. He's like, I'll prove to you that it's really me, my voice that you're all listening to.
Is there punishment for that rabbi.
For killing somebody, for Beis Din ruling inappropriately? Yeah, there's a terrible punishment, just not from Beis Din. Right. Well, you are subject to, right, you have to be now dealing with this for the rest of your days, right? That you're responsible for this person's death.
Yeah, but there's no punishment as such.
No, the guy's not going to get killed.
No. Well, we said Hashem sits with the judge.
That's right.
Judge,
so that's right. That's right. But I'm saying
Hashem will punish you.
Right. No, but there's still, exactly. He's got some kind of, he's got something coming. Unless he somehow accomplishes tshuva, which is what he's doing here every day, begging this guy for forgiveness. Now, whether he's going to succeed or not is another question, but that's certainly what he's trying to do over here. Right?
So this rabbi went and killed them himself? Just
no, he used the Beis Din, but he was the head of that Beis Din.
So the Beis Din agreed to that?
Yes. Mm. They didn't know this halacha, this Beis Din. This was the problem. Shim ben Shetach had the halacha, and he was telling them, you guys are blowing it. The head of the Sanhedrin knew it, but this particular Beis Din was missing it. Yeah. I was also very surprised that Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai wouldn't know this halacha. I was also surprised by this too, but says the Gemara, he didn't know it. And he wasn't a nobody. And he wasn't a nobody, right? Yeah. So if he's not a nobody, right, he's the head of his local court, right? So his all the rabbis there, so wrong, yes, this is right. But they come to the Sanhedrin, and Shim ben Shetach said, you blew it. Nice story that you were trying to tell me, all this fancy story about the Sadducees, that there's a bigger problem over here, right?
Look how good I did.
So now Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai says, Teidu, I'm going to prove to you that it was my voice, that it was really my voice screaming out there. Because Lamachar Humeis, because eventually he's going to die, meaning he doesn't want to say I'm going to die, right? He doesn't want to use that expression. So he says, tomorrow he's going to die. It's a euphemism for himself, right? He's going to say, eventually I'm going to die. Ein kol lo nishma, you're not going to hear the voice anymore. Right, trust me, as soon as I die, you're not going to hear the voice. It's my voice.
Well, right? You won't be shouting him
anymore. Oh, that's what Gemara says. Amarlay, the Gemara, they responded back to him and said, that's not a proof. Right, that's not a proof that it's your voice. Amarlay, they said, Amarlay, Rav Acha, Brei de Rava, lo Rav Ashi. Rav Acha, the son of Rava, said to Rav Ashi. This was a much later conversation in history. This was like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years later, but they revisited this proof, and they thought to themselves, hey, that's not a proof, just like he said, it's not a proof. Dilma, Bedina, Kambade. First thing is, maybe he stood before the heavenly courts and he was held accountable up in Shemayim. Mm-hmm. So now that Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai was held accountable in Shemayim, so the guy doesn't need to scream. The dead guy doesn't need to scream out anymore. He's coming to him already. I don't need to cry for nothing. Inami, alternatively, piuse paise. Maybe when Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai came to Olam Haba, he managed to appease the other guy. Meaning he managed to appease the dead guy, and now he's not so upset anymore. So either he got his judgment, or he appeased the guy, but either way, it's not a proof that just because there's no more voice after he died, that it wasn't the dead guy's voice the whole time. Yeah. Now, I don't know why they didn't just trust him at this point. Maybe they said, at this point, we can't trust anything you say. I don't know. I'm not sure. But that is the whole Gemara, guys. We'll stop here.
Okay. All right, yeah, sure, cool. All right.